Welcome everybody to another episode of Amplify Your Business. Today I'm talking to Ryan Saunders. He is the founder and CEO of Stone Temple Coffees. Now, what we're going to be getting into is going to be a fascinating discussion around international business and actually doing business in a developing third world and all the challenges that come with that. So welcome to the show, Ryan. I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us a little bit about your experiences.
Thanks, Lance. It's great to be here today.
So I wanted to start with, I guess, just getting a bit of an understanding as to your entrepreneurial journey. What has brought you to this point today? And maybe start with some of the things that you were doing down in Honduras with cashew wine, of all things, which is just a completely foreign concept to me. So walk us through what you were doing down there and how that all started and where you ended up now.
Sure. So just to go over things a little bit again, I'm originally from southeastern Ontario, and I had decided to, pursue a professional diving career in 2011, and that put me around the Caribbean, Grand Cayman, Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, and then eventually in Roatan, Honduras for 5 years. And in that process, I decided to branch off and start a business. So I did have a business partner at the time, and we decided to develop a holding company in, I believe it was 2012. And with the development of that, we had a lot of things on the table. And one of them was we took an interest in cashew wine. And I know a lot of people are thinking, how do you make wine from cashew nuts, right? Well, you don't.
Yeah.
For every cashew nut that you eat, what comes off of that is what's known as a cashew apple. It's very small, like a crab apple. It's very, very soft and mushy. So cashew wine's fairly popular in Belize. And we had decided that Roatan, Honduras needed to have a little more grassroots movement. And I had teamed up as a scuba diving instructor. I had teamed up with a Honduran chemical engineer who was actually making cashew wine passionately as a side project. And he didn't have the marketing capabilities to market this. So that was something in my background that I knew how to do. So we took a year to develop a line of cashew wine that we released as a dry, a semi-dry, and a sweet. And that's what kicked off our distribution company. So I had distributed this wine to restaurants, bars, hotels, duty frees, and eventually ended up flooding the market with it. And that's when we decided to start to expand our portfolio. So we branched out into other fruit wines released under Stone Temple. So we were Stone Temple Wines before we were Stone Temple Coffees. And then we had a line of artisan soaps. And then eventually we began to develop Stone Temple Coffees. Came in about 2014. And we had decided to take the 6 growing regions in Honduras and create a roast profile from each growing region to add to our portfolio. And that kind of helped build our portfolio so that we had a full-on portfolio to take around Roatan, Honduras.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I mean, what an adventure that is. And yeah, I think probably everybody I would venture to guess on this podcast right now or listening probably never even thought of cashew as having a fruit to it. So yeah, you learn something new every day. So now in that, I guess, experience, you're down there, you decide to start this business with your partner and you start to, you know, venture into the wine business. And then obviously you grew beyond that. The learning that you must have had in trying to do business in a third world country must be as vast as the product potentials that you guys had down there. So tell me about that experience. So it just seems so intimidating to me to think about trying to do business in a country like that. So walk me through what was going on there and some lessons.
Right. Right. And we'll get right into brass tacks here, and we'll just talk about how to develop a company down there. So
yeah,
so one of the things, you know, is the paperwork. And I think if you're on your toes in Canada or even the USA, you can have a company together in 3-4 days tops, you know, on a good given day, a week to 2 weeks. You know, and you've got a company together. In Honduras, it can take up to 3 months to put a company together. So it involves, you know, having to go into a bank, you know, open a bank account up, documents signed left, right, and center, everything from having a certified accountant. Bribery, you know, the World Bank talks about it. You know, it's right in, you know, if you're going to open a business in a third world country, you know, bribery is a part of the deal, you know. Mm-hmm. So as far as getting municipal permits or anything done, you know, in a timely manner, it's, you know, it costs extra, you know. So and it blew my mind to read this in, you know, where does, you know, the rankings to open up business, you know, I think there's, what is there, 100 and some odd countries in the world. I think Honduras at the time ranked, you know, 89th to do business in, you know, for level of difficulty. I'm 29 years old. I'm 29 years old going on 30, all getting ready to open my first business up. And here I am in, you know, in Honduras trying to do this. Yeah. So I had some other people that had businesses going, you know, take me into the bank and take me to the municipal and, you know, walk me through things.
Yeah.
Just to get the paperwork in order and then, you know, have to wait on the paperwork. So,
yeah, so I'm curious,
it was very lengthy.
Yeah, I'm curious about the bribery. So one of the things, I hear this all the time in second world and third world countries, just you have to grease the wheels. It's just an expectation. There's no way that you can get around it. But what always puzzled me about that is, okay, well, how do you determine what is actually the right amount to be paying when you're having to bribe somebody? So it's not like they have a list of bribery charges, do they?
Good question. There's, put it this way, there's a standard rate of bribery for these scenarios. So it really depends, you know, it's interesting to see how they get away with it. It's a very crafty scenario down there. And, you know, it's a matter of where do you want your paperwork to sit? Do you want it at the top of the pile or do you want it at the bottom of the pile for 3 months? You know, so you can get something done in a week. You can get something done in 3 months. You can get something done in 6 months. So it's all based on priority. So basically, you know, $25 goes a long way down there. You know, that's 2 days worth of wages to us. So, you know, $25 to $100 can get you through the process, depending on who you're talking to, what stage you're at.
It's illegal though. Just
signed by a lawyer. Sorry.
It just be clear, it is illegal though down there, right? So then is it like just kind of like you're saying it out of the side of your mouth or is this something where it's really in the open?
No, it's in the open. I mean, it's not, who would you take it to? The police? I mean, you can buy your way, you know, you can buy your way through a speeding ticket for $25 down there. The corruption's that hard. Everybody's just trying to eat. So yeah. There's no one to take it to, you know? You want to take it higher up, you're going to pay more money. it's not, I want to say it's, I don't want to say sideways, but it's really hard down there. It's very hard. It's hard for everybody. And at the end of the day, you know, everybody just wants a slice of the pie. So.
Gotcha. So, okay. So you get your paperwork all filled out. Then what happens? What's the next steps then?
Next steps, once your paperwork's in order, you know, you have to have a legitimate licensed accountant. So that takes place as well. And then, you know, you're submitting monthly, you know, invoicing, and your invoicing's very customized, you know, and it's very old school. I can't just fire up QuickBooks and use QuickBooks down there. It has to be, the invoicing has to be all set and legitimized and stamped and certified. So there's a lot of old school, things that happen. One of the things, you know, we had to get was a company stamp, like an embossment stamp.
Yeah.
So all any legal work or anything that, you know, it's still the same as here. You still have to go through all that legitimizing process whenever you're trying to do, because they want to track as much out of you as they can. And the taxes are high. I think we were dealing with like a 25% tax rate. So, you know, we looked, you know, to make sure that we had the write-offs to be able to play the game.
Yeah. So you definitely want all of that part of it above board for sure then. So that's the corporate tax rate, 25%. What's the personal tax rate down there then?
Oh, geez. I believe it was at 15% when I was there.
15? Okay.
Yeah.
So they do a lot more of their tax collection than from the corporate side of the ledger versus the personal, it sounds like.
That's right. One of the big issues there is they don't have a civic system in place. So
yeah,
you can it's easy for some people to hide.
Yeah. So
very easy.
So then in terms of like operating the business down there, how did that go? Is it was that pretty complicated, or once you got
it was fairly straightforward in regards to operation, but you know, one of the things, especially on the islands, you know, it's controlled by, you know, tourism. So you have a high season and a low season. So we were in scenarios where I would provide, we'll say, one of the largest supermarkets there, I'd provide them with $5,000 worth of product. Well, high season, I might be 45 days out before I get paid. And in slow season, it might be, you know, it was 90 days. It would take 3 months to get paid. So, I mean, and this was, you know, this was a practice seen through, you know, several different, you know, whether it was a duty free or a supermarket, there were certain scenarios where the larger they were, the more they could muscle the small vendors around.
Yeah.
And that made it difficult. That made it really difficult for us to operate, because having that money tied up for so long, you know, it played a role in us not being able to turn around and purchase more product. So yeah, in the end, it, you know, that's what, you know, it was one of the reasons for us to shut the operation down.
Yeah. In terms of like just the day-to-day operations of it, the employee side of things, any challenges there or any uniqueness there that is just kind of like a scratcher, or this is just really odd compared to what we're used to here in Canada?
Right. So yeah, employees were, it was a hard thing to deal with too. You know, I would come home and, you know, and try and vacation, you know, and things would go missing, you know, or, you know, a company vehicle would somehow magically break down, you know, and those other back issues that, you know, operating not just third world, but operating on an island. You know, we were posed with vehicle breakdowns we couldn't get parts for, you know, that would take 3 months to get parts. So things would be sitting, you know, that would be an issue. You know, products going missing. So there were certain aspects of it that we just, you know, you have to be there. You have to always, you know, be in control. I think trying to hand anything over, you know, or give responsibility was a very difficult thing to do down there.
Yeah. So what would you say was one of the, you know, the biggest challenges that you had? You've talked about a few different things here. I don't know if there's something else that was bigger, but what was it and how did you overcome it, I guess?
I think one of the biggest challenges, and I mean, we still see it here, is just market introductory. Okay. Again, with the cashew wine in the beginning, what we had was a great niche product. So nobody had it, which made it really, really interesting. But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword because you have to educate your people as to what your product is. You know, if your product's going to sit on a shelf, for instance, cashew wine, you know, some people are going to say, okay, let's try that. And other people are just, you know, they're going to go with what they know. So the big one is product education. So I would say, you know, anybody that's bringing a new product into market, that's a niche product, you know, you're going to have to educate your consumer with, you know, marketing materials. And that was a big one for us. So, you know, we had those extra marketing materials, you know, brought in, you know, and we had to explain to the retailers, say, look, this is a new product. This is a new product, not, you know, for everybody. You know, so we did have to, you know, do some education and, you know, put some PowerPoints up and so forth with product displays and whatnot to show, you know, reasons to purchase the product.
Were you focused mostly on just the domestic sales then, or did you export as well from Honduras?
No, we strictly focused on domestic sales. We did dabble a little bit into the mainland, but mostly just focused on Roatan as a whole. Okay. And one of the things we did, you know, we considered, you know, we looked at some export scenarios. It's not something that we ever got to.
Okay. And so now you're selling coffee. And so is the coffee as well growing in Honduras then?
Yeah. So we do source coffee from Marcala, Honduras, and it's excellent coffee. We've branded that as our house roast. My wife, I ended up actually marrying a Honduran. My wife's Honduran. We've got a little 2.5-year-old boy. Oh, nice. And her uncle actually is tied back in. He has a beautiful plantation in Comunagua, Honduras, which is the largest region for exporting and growing coffee in Honduras out of the 6 regions there. So now we source coffee from all over. So we, you know, we're Ethiopia, Mexico, Indonesia, Peru, and we do some blending and so forth. So now our sales, you know, we're on Walmart.ca. We're on Amazon. We've done some exporting, and you know, we've worked with FSBP agents, for, you know, the US side of things. So we've sold on Amazon.com. We've recently onboarded with Gordon's Food Services Canada. We're set to do trade shows under their housing in October.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so it sounds like lots of growth. So what kind of lessons, I guess, did you learn from the previous ventures like the wine and so on that has really helped you out now then with the coffees?
I think, you know, I from having a business in Honduras versus Canada, one of the things I've had to, you know, relearn a lot. It's funny, you know, I was gone away for 7 years. I was living in another world for 7 years. And I'm glad to be back in Canada. You know, no regrets with what I've done. And you know, I have learned a lot, but I've had to relearn coming home, just because the markets are different here. They're not structured the same. They don't operate the same. We don't carry some of the same values that they have in Honduras, you know. And even though we were catering, you know, we were catering to tourists and so forth as well. Just the market structure here's different. And we're in as coffee's, you know, the second most traded commodity in the world next to crude oil. We're in a very tough competitive market. Yeah. So one of the things, you know, we wanted to stay dynamic and stay original with our branding and, you know, have our foot strong down on that. I think, you know, supply chain and logistics, I think, you know, a huge difference here, the way everything's handled. So in order to play the game, you know, we've had to look at you know, how supermarkets function here, function in Canada, and kind of grasp, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. So just to tackle that, you know.
Yeah. And so are you bringing in the unroasted beans, or are they already roasted and then you're grinding them here, or what is the product, you know, development cycle?
So we have a certified fair trade organic processing facility, and we work with a couple other companies who handle the roasting. We bring everything in bulk. So we package, process, grind, and blend all our coffee.
Okay.
We're just in the process of developing our actual, a new roasting facility for us for next year. As we've gotten the market introductories that we're looking for. So we've handled the sourcing, you know, we source from Montreal. We have all that, you know, we pick and choose what we want. You know, we've, you know, taken a long time to choose our roast profiles and develop our product.
Yeah.
So we've outsourced the roasting until we, you know, and put more money and more focus into marketing, which we felt needed to be done because of the competition out there. You know?
Yeah.
We want to see that we've got the proper foothold that we need to, in order to bring in the proper facility to handle what we want, you know. So it's a large investment. You know, we're almost 100K in now.
Yeah.
With what we've got going on, and we want to put another 100K into it. So we're set. We do have a pre-approval for crowdsourcing, and in order to franchise the business, we're just developing a cafe off of our processing facility now, and then we pay a lot of money to maintain, to work with the OCIA, which is the National Organic Association.
Yeah.
To maintain both our USDA and our Canadian organic regime, organic certifications.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say would be the key then for that you've experienced in getting that market penetration in a market that is so congested with other brands?
Good question. And you know, whether it's, you know, coffee or donuts or whatever, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, you can't rush product into market. It happens when it happens, and you can push and you can jump and you can scream and you can do all these things, and it's not going to make anything move any faster. One of the things, you know, that we found, and just to use, you know, Amazon for an example, because we're up against, you know, a lot of other brands, you know, almost every other brand in the market, you know, so we now, you know, we've established daily sales, and what that's taken, it's, you know, it's taken money in advertising. It's taken money with consultants that know how to operate Amazon. And it's taken, you know, it takes goodwill of the people, and that takes time, you know, it takes reviews,
yeah,
you know, so we have to, in a sense, you have to buy goodwill to start. You have to, you know, you have to spend money on marketing and get people trying your product and, you know, eventually backing your product. What does everybody do? You know, they rush to Amazon to read reviews for anything that they want to know about. So. Yeah. First and foremost, you have to buy the will of the people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about word of mouth nowadays and social acceptance. Right. And so definitely proof through reviews and ratings and that all really pay off in your category for sure. So what are the next steps? So for Stone Temple, is it new markets? Is it just growing your existing markets?
Right. So that's a very good question. So originally, you know, we had started in 2017, and you know the bread and butter, you always have to take the lowest hanging fruit in a business.
Yeah.
You know, and what works for the business, where's the money at, and you know, follow the money. When we first started, we had a, you know, we said, okay, we got to introduce this to the market. So we you know, I put good money into a 10 by 10 event tent, and we started doing farmers markets, you know, as a starting point. And we got having fun with it. And then we got making money, and we were doing very, very well. We were, you know, booked up for events left, right, and center. And we were small. I was operating out of my house at the time, you know, putting everything together. And then COVID hit, you know, the pandemic came. So what do you, you know, we stopped, we had to really scratch our head what to do. So we put all our eggs, I don't say all our eggs into one basket, but we put majority of them in, and that was, we decided to hit Amazon really hard. So we hit Amazon hard, and then we also decided, like, let's try and open up the American market with our product. Because I said, we can't, you know, the grocery stores have stopped taking on new product. Nobody knows what to do. There was no, you know, there's no protocol into place.
Yeah.
So we brought an FSVP agent on board. I brought a buddy of mine from South Carolina, and we shipped him, I think, you know, $10,000 worth of product to put in the warehouse to start to push into, you know, slowly trickle into the market where we could get it in, you know, and ship into Amazon. While we waited through the pandemic. And as we did that, you know, as things started to move a little more forward, and, you know, we got sales, you know, more or less, you know, on the rise. We put in last year, we put in a 15 by 30 foot processing facility. And now the cafe out of it is to help us grow, you know, our square roots for customers to come in and get to know us and get to buy the product direct. We're in a big tourist town. We're close to the provincial sandbank. So we've got a large following, and it's, you know, it's growing. So we figured that would be, you know, the next phase of it. And, you know, when we originally developed the product, we developed it from an ability to market it, as far as, you know, t-shirts or franchising or so forth. So we're considering those options on the table. We just, of course, want to see what the economy is doing and post pandemic, and just keep an eye on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm curious, you know, as an entrepreneur, we're all looking for success, right? We want to have a successful business. In your eyes, what does, or your mind, how do you define success for you?
Yeah, I think success, I think as soon as anybody hears that, success is a $1 million in the bank, and nobody's going to argue that with you. But I think success, in order to be successful, you have to be driven, you know, you have to be driven to have success come to you. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. You've got to work for success. And I think finding those smaller things, you know, whether it's a compliment, you know, or a 5-star review on Amazon, I think those things, when you connect directly with people, you know, and people go out of their way to tell you, this is a great product, I love it, you know, I've come here for you, I've come here for this product. I think that's success, you know, in the raw.
Yeah. So when do you know when it's time to stop, I guess, as an entrepreneur?
I think one of the things is you need to know how to, we say stop, but you need to know how to pause. You know, you can't do it all at once. I think you have to set yourself up, you know, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, knowing that there's going to be a pile of failure in the process. So, you know, you've got to, there's a plan B that always has to, you know, take place. The biggest thing is not to bite off more than you can chew. And sometimes that's hard because success takes risk, you know, and you've got to weigh your risk, and you've got to find the right stepping stones to do it. You know, you can't just walk into $100,000 deal. You need a $25,000 deal. Then you need a $50,000 deal. And then you do a $100,000 deal. So it's finding those, you know, finding that right deal and taking those smaller steps so that you don't need to stop.
Yeah.
But you do, you know, like you do need to have a secondary plan. I'm a carpenter, you know, by heart. Originally, I took a Bachelor of Arts in psychology at Ottawa U, but I, you know, I, after that, I didn't. I went back into carpentry, and it's something I'm very passionate about. So there's still a couple days out of the week that I will pick up a hammer, you know, and go and freelance and work for some guys that I worked with for a long time, you know, if I decide that I need to put some extra money in my pocket, you know. So yeah. When fall or winter hits, I've got those extra days that I can fall back on if I need it.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. I don't think as an entrepreneur, you need to stop. You need to be able to adapt. You need to know how to adapt, and you need to know, you know, what stepping stone to take. And that can be very difficult, especially if you don't have a mentor. And I think that's, you know, it can be difficult. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, our newly minted entrepreneurs don't necessarily know where to turn, or they know where to turn and there's too much information in their face. And that's, you know, one of the things with today's world is, you know, everybody wants a piece. Everybody wants to service your business. You know,
yeah.
I think new entrepreneurs coming in with something don't realize, look, you're going to set your website up and you're not going to have 100 buyers at your door. You're going to have 300 marketers asking you if they can, if you need any more web development.
I
think they just, you know, you've got to be ready. Everybody, you know, everybody wants a piece of your pie.
So. Yeah. Well, let's not pick on the marketers too hard, but when it comes to your mentor though, so how did you go about finding a mentor?
I don't think I ever officially found a mentor. I've worked with, you know, I've worked with people, and the people that I've liked working with that have knowledge, again, so back to the marketers, I'll give some marketers some praise. You know, I have worked with marketers where, you know, I like what they're doing, and I'll say, okay, you know, what, how are they doing this? What's going on? And can I do any of it? You know, is there any, so there were certain things, you know, I think I would, you know, the extra things that I found that I could do and not have to pay for, I would do. So I kind of operated that way, you know, and it was hard too, because we were operating, you know, 2 years through the pandemic.
Yeah.
So again, you'd have to get crafty, you know, and a lot of people say to me, Ryan, you're a problem solver, you know, and that was the big thing, you know, this is a problem. How do we solve it? So I became good at that. Especially in a third world country where there's, you know, 10 times the amount of problems, you know, in a day. You know, it was a walk in the park coming home to Canada and opening up a business.
Yeah. Yeah. You sort of honed a superpower down there in a lot of respect.
I did. And, you know, the joke, one of my good friends says to me, he says, yeah, you know, you didn't win down there. He says, but look what he says. You might as well say you've paid for your degree in business.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I believe I paid for that.
Well, thanks so much, Ryan. I really appreciate you being so, you know, upfront and forthright with all of your experiences, you know, internationally, but then also what's going on here at home as well. So if people wanted to reach out and connect with you and maybe try some of the coffee, what's the best way for them to do so?
Definitely. They can find me at www.stonetemplecoffees.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn. So if any of the entrepreneurs want to jump over, hit me up on LinkedIn under Ryan Saunders. You can find me there. And I'm definitely here to help out anybody that needs extra help, especially from a mentor standpoint. Anybody out there listening that has some questions, definitely feel free to reach out to me.
That's a generous offer. Thank you so much, Ryan. And for those of you who are listening and watching this podcast right now, if you're interested in checking out the archives, head over to amplifyyourbusiness.ca. You're going to find them all there, as well as all of our future episodes. And if you happen to be an entrepreneur that has an interesting story that you want to share as well, there's an application form there so that you can be a future guest potentially on Amplify Your Business. And we're also available everywhere that you can download or listen to podcasts. So just search Amplify Your Business at any of your favorite podcasting platforms as well. So until the next one, everybody have a prosperous day.